We're holding on Ein Aleph Amud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines, the line begins Oysa. We've been talking about the point that Bavel has the best yuchsin as far as people being able to marry, other, as far as who's able to marry who, where we said even in Eretz Yisrael there's a certain mixture of psulim into families, but in Bavel, for the most part, it's clean. So now the Gemara is going to get into the details of that.
We also said above all, also going back to times that there was mixtures, like we had the whole story we had about him. He didn't want his daughter to get married to him. See, they, you
well,
know,
that,
he said,
actually,
like,
that was Rav Yehuda being concerned, being extra concerned, and Rav Ullah telling him that you have a way to figure it out. You see which families are quiet when people start fights with them.
That was the end of it, yeah, okay.
Right. By the way, I forgot to mention in that connection, actually, when we mentioned that point, when the Rambam brings this halacha about when a person is quiet, when people call him an eved or whatever, so elsewhere, actually, the Gemara says if people call a person a mamzer or an eved or whatever, and he's quiet, then it's not a good thing, because then it means maybe it's not true. However, the Ravid says, and ultimately the Ramah brings this to halacha, nowadays where the Bate Dinim don't keep track of such things and don't necessarily punish people for casting such aspersions, then in fact, maybe it is better for the person to be quiet, and maybe that, like Gemara said, that does show his better yichus, that he's not getting involved in an argument, which nothing is going to really come of it anyway, because Beis Din is not really going to get involved, and Beis Din doesn't really keep track of these things anymore anyway. Anyway, so now the Gemara is going to talk about, though, within Bavel itself, there are different places. I'm going to pop a Savim Shmeidet Ad. Bavel Bria. Bavel as a whole is healthy as far as Yuchsin. On the other hand, Mishon Mesa. On the other hand, Mishon, now I sent on the WhatsApp group, I sent a map of the area. Mishon is an area at the southeastern corner of Bavel. So that area, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that is, it's full of psula yichus, so it's mesa, it's dead in the sense that you're not going to expect to find any kosher people over there in terms of yichus. Marsha says another point as well. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos that when somebody is a mamzer, but it's not known, Hashem arranges that they should die young so people don't intermarry with them. So therefore, so it can mean mesa in the literal sense. The people of Meshon are less healthy because you have unknown mamzerim among them and Hashem doesn't want them to proliferate. Anyway, Rapapa Slava continues, Modai Chola, Modai, which is nowadays in Iran, is sick, meaning most of the Jews there are kosher, but there are a substantial number of psulim among them. Elam, Goseses, and Elam, another area in Iran, the area around Shushan, is deathly sick, like a Goses who's on the verge of death. So the Gemara says, what's the difference between a chola and a goses? The difference is, roiv chola machayim, roiv goses in lamisa, most people who are sick are going to live. Most people who are grossest in are going to die. So the same way, in other words, Modai is mostly kosher Jews, and Aram is mostly non-kosher Jews, mostly Mamzerim and other Psulei and other Psulim. So now the Gemara is going to get into the actual borders of what's considered Bavel as far as these halachas. So last night on the WhatsApp group, I sent a map to be able to orient ourselves, but even without the map, we can manage well enough, I think. Now, Rashi starts by explaining like this. Bavel as a whole, the Jewish community in Bavel, was located between the two rivers, Chidekel and Pros. You have the Chidekel on the east side of Bavel, and you have the Pros on the west side, closer to Eretz Yisrael. Now, Rashi learns that Rashi says, based on this Gemara and other Gemaras in other places, it seems, Rashi says, that these rivers flow from south to north, because Pros in particular is by the border of Eretz Yisrael, and we find other Gemara, the Pasuk mentions that, and we find Gemaras that make mention of that point, and Eretz Yisrael is south of Bavel. So therefore it would have to be that these rivers flow from south to north, it actually explains. Tosfos says that no, those same Gemaras can be understood as being that the rivers flow from north to south. And if you look on a map, you'll see that's how they are on a map. Both the Hideka and the Prus start out in springs up someplace in Turkey, and they flow more or less southeast through Turkey and then Syria and through Iraq. And then they eventually meet together, they join together to form one waterway, and it empties into the Persian Gulf. So here the Gemara is going to talk about various landmarks and various cities and other landmarks on the Hideka and on the Prus rivers, and use those to define the borders of what's the solidly Jewish and good Yichus area of Bavel, as opposed to what are the outlying areas where the Jews there, maybe the Bate Dinim, are not so competent and are not looking after things and so forth. So Ad Heichan Hi Bavel. So how far does Bavel extend? So first we're going to talk about how far it extends towards the east, meaning away from Eretz Yisrael. Rab Omar Ad Nahar Azak Ushmul Omar Ad Nahar Yuan. So Rav says it's going to go until the river Azak, and Shmuel says till the river Yoyan. So now both of those are east of the Hideka River. In older editions of Rashi, there's a diagram over here, but our editions of Rashi don't have one in front of us. The Marshal and Marshal have diagrams based on their respective understandings of Rashi. The Marshal has a diagram, and then the Marshal has a similar diagram, but with variations in it because of differences in how they understand the sugya. Anyway. So you have Nahar Azak is closer to the Hideka, and Nahar Yuani is a little further out. So Rav is saying, there are also rivers, yeah. The point is that Rav is saying that the Jewish community of Bavel doesn't stop exactly at the Hideka, it goes a little bit east of that. So Rav and Shmuel are saying it goes a little bit east of that until the river Azak or the river Yuani respectively. That map that I sent on the WhatsApp group, you can see, if you look carefully, there's a river flowing more or less parallel to the south part of the Hideka, which is labeled over there Nahar Yuani. So. Okay. Next. L'Eil B'Diglas Ad Heicha. What about upstream on the Hideka? So going upstream, closer back to the source of the river. So according to Rashi, this would be going further south, because remember, Rashi is saying that these rivers start out in the south and flow towards the north. According to Tosfos and according to the maps that we look at now, it's the other way around. It's asking how far north along the Hideka. Rab Omar Bagda Avna. Rab says until the cities of Bagda and Avna, which are places near each other, with the one on one side of the Hideka River, the other on the other side. And Shmuel says it goes further, it goes all the way to Mushkini, however not including the area of Mushkini itself. So the Gemara says, why not? Mushkini is just like the Gola, which is a nickname for Pumbedissa. Pumbedissa was one of the central places of Jewish life in Bavel, and therefore sometimes the Gemara calls it Gola, like it itself is the place of the Golos, like the central place of Bavel. So we're saying that Mushkini is just as good as Pumbedissa as far as Le'inyan Yuchsin, as far as Yuchsin, that just like we know the Jews of Pumbedissa and the whole Am Yuchasim, the same way the people of Mushkini. So we have to say what Shmuel meant was Ad Mushkini U Mushkini Bechlal. So Shmuel says that Mushkini is included upstream on the Hidekel, is included in the area of the Yuchsin of Bavel. By the way, the Gemara is calling the river over here Diglas in Hebrew. It's called, as we have in Parashas Bereishis, the Hideka. And so there are two different variations of the same name, Diglas Hideka. In Arabic nowadays, for example, they call the river the Dijla, which is the same word as Diglas here in the Gemara. In English, coming from Greek, it's called the Tigris. Again, another variation of the same name.
Because it sounds like a Degel.
It sounds like a Degel, but right. But it's the Aramaic name and ultimately the Arab name for the river Hideka. Okay. Next, Latachlas v'Diglas ad Heicha. But how about downstream on the Diglas, on the Hideka? How far does the Jewish community extend? The one that has good Yuchsin. Omer Rav Shmuel ad Apamya Tatar. All the way until lower Apamya. Now, the Gemara points out, Tauti Apamya Havyan. There are two towns in that area called Apamya. Chada Elisa v'chada Tatiosa. One of them is further up, one of them is further on higher ground, meaning according to Rashi, it would be further south, and according to Tosfos, it would be further north. V'chod tata, and v'chod tatiyasa, and the other one is lower down. Of those two cities at Pamya, one of them, the Jews of them, are kosher as far as Yuchsin, the other one is posel. There's a distance of a parsa, about 2.5 or 3 miles, between these two cities of Apamya. Now, the people in those towns are very machped on one another to stay apart. They won't even borrow fire from each other. In other words, the people of Upper Apamya, who are the Miuchasim, they're very careful not at all to intermingle with the people of Lower Apamya, who are the Psulim, because they don't want that they should end up becoming close to them socially and eventually intermarry with them. The Simonach, your Simon, which one is which? The Psulta Hod Mishdayim Meishonis. The one that's posel is the one where they speak in the dialect of Meishon. We just said before, Meishon in the southeast corner of Bavel is an area full of psulim. So therefore, Lower Apamya, they speak that dialect because they're very close to Meishon, meaning that there are actually people from Meishon mixed in with them, and that's why they're posel. And therefore, that helps us remember anytime you find somebody from Apamya who speaks in Meishon, in Meishon type Aramaic, then you know that he's one of the psulim.
Like speaking English.
It's like speaking English with an English accent versus a British accent, with an American accent versus a British accent, exactly. Okay, next. La'el b'pros adhecha, upstream on the pros, which is now returning to the west side of Bavel. How far does the area of good yichus extend? So here we have three different opinions. Rav Omar ad Akla de Tobakni. Rav says it goes until the fort of Tobakni, a certain landmark that was known to them. Shmuel Omar ad Gishra de Beit Pros. Shmuel extends it up further and says until the bridge over the Pros. Rav Yochanan Omar ad Mavarta de Gizma. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says, until the ford of Gizma, which was a certain place, a ford is a shallow area in the river where it's easy to cross. So Rabbi Yochanan says that it's there. Here you have Marshal and Marshal argue, is Rabbi Yochanan saying an area further even than Shmuel? Or is he saying an area not quite as far as Shmuel? So in other words, is the order of the places in the Marshal's diagram, you have Mavarta de Gizma, he shows is further north, which again in Rashi's system over here, north means further downstream than Gishra de Pros, which means that Rabbi Yochanan is not extending the boundaries quite so far out as Shmuel is. Shmuel is saying all the way till the bridge, Rabbi Yochanan is saying only until Mavarta de Gizma. Mavarta would mean ford. It would mean the ford of Gizma. So Gizma would be the name of a place or the name of the ford for whatever reason. Marsha, on the other hand, draws it differently. He has Mavarta de Gizma even further north, which is to say downstream of than after the Tobakni. So according to him, Shmuel is the one going the furthest out, Rav less, and Rav Yechanan even less than that. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Layit Abaya, the Tamer of Yosef, ad Rav. Now Abaya, or some say of Yosef, criticized, Layit literally means he cursed, anybody who would follow Rav's opinion about how far the boundary extends. Because, in other words, it comes out, Abaya, or Rav Yosef, is saying that, look, it comes out that Rav's opinion extends out the boundaries above all too far. By the time you get to Akra de Tobakni, you're already dealing with an area that contains Psulim. Why are you relying on Rav's opinion and saying that's Kshedim? So the Gemara asks, Ad Rav Layit, Ad Shmuel Lo Layit. So why would he only be criticizing people who follow Rav? Why isn't he criticizing also Shmuel, where Shmuel's opinion makes it even further upstream than Rav? So Ella, no, what he means is Layit ad Rav, but Kol Shekein ad Shmuel. So he criticizes Rav all the more so Shmuel because he says Shmuel extends it even further out. Now this is where we get to where is Rabbi Yochanan's position relative to the other two. If we say Rabbi Yochanan's position doesn't extend it out even as far as Rav, well then fine. Then Abaya is saying Rabbi Yochanan of the three opinions, Rabbi Yochanan's is the one you should follow.
It's closer.
Yeah, because it's closer to the main Jewish settlement area above it. if you say that Rabbi Yochanan's place, this Ma'avar to Gizma, is further out than Shmuel's, then you have the question of what exactly. So why is he not mentioning Rabbi Yochanan as well? And in fact, the Maharshal explains that since Abaya and Rav and Shmuel are all from Bavel, whereas Rabbi Yochanan is from Eretz Yisrael, so Abaya knows there's no problem. Whatever Rabbi Yochanan says, who in Bavel is going to be paying attention to what Rabbi Yochanan from Eretz Yisrael says? But Pashas, they're going to figure he doesn't know the geography as well. So therefore, it's mainly Rav and Shmuel's opinion that he's concerned about, and therefore, if Rabbi Yochanan extends it out further than them, he doesn't care about it so much. But on the other hand, this is the Maharshal. The Maharshal answers that, and again, Maharshal doesn't like that explanation, and so there's different explanations over here. The Hamakne explains now what is going on over here. Rabbi Yochanan would tell people from Eretz Yisrael, you listen, you're from Eretz Yisrael, you don't have such a yichus anyway, so you can go marry people further north from Bavel without further upstream without having to worry about their yichus. But Abaya is saying we bnei Bavel who ourselves are the miyuchasim, we should be more careful and not go nearly that far. Another way you could explain it, though, is that in fact it is the original way we said it correct was correct. Abaya was criticizing people who follow Rav's opinion, but not Shmuel's. Doesn't Shmuel extend it further upstream, and that means there's even more area that he's including that might have sold him? No, because the difference is the gisha, the Beit Pros, Latatori Habakori. What happens is in Shmuel's times that bridge was further downstream. Nowadays, by Abaya's times, the bridge had been moved. Persians had rebuilt the bridge further upstream. So therefore, so now if people continue to use that landmark, but now that landmark itself has been moved, then Abaya is saying don't do that. But if people continue to use the original place where it was, which is in fact further downstream than Rav, then Abaya has no problem with that because up until then is in fact kosher to people. Okay. By the way, Rashi mentions that, we've talked about upstream on the Prus, we've talked about downstream on the Chidekel, and upstream on the Chidekel. What about downstream on the Prus? Rashi points out, since the Chidekel and the Prus eventually join together, and only then they continue flowing, and eventually they pass through the area of Mishon and all, then the Gemara doesn't need to ask what downstream on the Prus, because before it reaches that area, it's already joined together with the Chidekel. Okay. So now Abaya asks Rabbi Yosef, what about on this side of the Prus? So far we talked about the area between the Chidekel and the Prus, the main area above it. What about going west from the Prus, in the direction of Eretz Yisrael, how far can we find Miuchosin? In the direction of Eretz Yisrael. Keep in mind, there's not continuous settlement between them. You have a desert between them. But the question is, when you start going westward from the Prus, you still will find Jewish communities over there. How far are they? Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef answers, my daitach nishum Biram. Why are you asking about? You must be asking because of the city of Biram, which is located on the west side of the Prus. Well, yeah, you should know. Miyachse de Pumbadisa mi Biram Nasvi. The Miyuchas families of Pumbedisa marry wives from Biram, so yes, you can be sure that Biram is Miyuchasim. Further out than that, Pashtus, the Gemara doesn't have to ask, because further out than that, it's really basically all desert anyway, and you don't really have Jewish communities over there. So now the Gemara says, Omer HaPapa, K'machloikus L'yuchsin, Kach Machloikus L'inyin Gittin. Now, we learned in Masech the Gittin, yeah, where maybe get in the beginning, I said, yeah, I'm a person who brings a get from an overseas country, it's the same, B'fon HaNechdam, and we have the two reasons that the Gemara discussed over there extensively at the beginning of the Masech. Is it because the Bote Dinim out in Medina Sayyam are not expert enough to know the din that a get has to be written Lashma, and when the guy comes and says b'fana nechtam, the based in Eretz Yisrael will ask him about the rest of the detail and he'll be able to tell them it was written Lashma, or is it because the Edim are not available to be Mekayim it, so therefore you might have the husband might claim the signatures are forged or something and you don't have people to be able to validate the signatures. Anyway, we learned there in the Gemara in Gittin that Bavel is like Eretz Yisrael as far as the dinim of B'fana Nechtam. So that if you bring a get from within Bavel itself, from one country to it, from one area of Bavel to another, or we discuss between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, then you don't have to say Rafana Nechta, Rafana Nechtem. So again, we have to discuss what are the borders of Bavel as far as that halacha. So Rav Papa says, the same machloikas between Rav and Shmuel and Rav Yechanan that we have as far as Yuchsin, the same machloikas is as far as machloikas in Gittin, the same machloikas as far as Gittin. So if a person brings a get from one of these areas, we have to see whether it's within the zone that we're talking about, that we just discussed in the Gemara, eastward till Nahar Azak or Nahar Yuani and upstream until Bagdav Avner or Mushkini and so forth, all these landmarks that we just mentioned. But Rabbi Yosef Amram,
why don't we do like Shabbos? We make a tchum of 2,000 amos or 5,000 amos, whatever.
Because here it's not a matter of tchum. Here it's a matter of we need to see what is the area where Jews with yichus have settled. You have to keep in mind also, you know, we have to put ourselves in the mentality of back then. It wasn't, you know, nowadays, let's say the Jews of New York are yichusim and the Jews of Florida are not, let's say, because people are constantly moving from one to the other. But in those times, basically, people stayed put for hundreds of years. So you could define a certain area where the Yemir Chosim live and a certain area outside of that where you can't be so sure about it. So, Rav Yosef Amar, Machloikas LeYuchsin. So Rav Yosef says, the Machloikas here between Rav and Shmuel and Rav Yechanan about the various borders is only as far as Yuchsin. Abel Gittin, but when it comes to Gittin, Divrei Hakol, at Arba to Nyanan to Gishra, everybody agrees that the boundary of Bavel for that purpose is the second area of swamp of willows by the bridge. So in other words, the bridge, Papashka, is the same bridge over the Pros that we mentioned before. There's various areas near there, swamps where willow trees grow. The second one, northward or southward, whatever it is, Rabbi Yosef is saying that was known to be the boundary of the main Jewish settlement of Bavel, and therefore if a person brings a get in anywhere within that area, he doesn't have to say b'fana nechtem, but outside that he does. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omer Rami Bar Abba, Chovil Yama Tchelta de Bavel. The area called Chovil Yama is a region within Bavel, Tchelta de Bavel. It's the Tchelas of Bavel. Rashi explains Tchelta is Meloshin Miklila. It's like the perfection, like the most perfect Yuchsin you can find over there. Different explanation is Meloshin Tchelas. A Tchelas is a beautiful adornment for a garment, like the Tzitzis. And the same way here, it's like the most beautiful jewel of Bavel as far as Yuchsin. It's an area within Bavel. It's an area within Bavel. Rashi and Tosfos don't define it over here. People who deal in detail with the geography of the Gemara will try to figure out exactly what area it is. It seems it's an area near the ancient city of Bavel. And the idea might be, in fact, that would have been the area where, when the Jews were first taken into Galus at the end of the first Beis Mikdash, they settled first in that area because it was close to the capital of Bavel. So therefore, even now, hundreds of years later, they retain the most perfect Yuchsin. Within that, Shunya, Vaguvia, Tchelta, the Chovil Yama. Within that, the towns of Shunya and Guvia have the most perfection within Chovil Yama itself. Ravina Amaaf Tzitzura, and Ravina adds also a third town called Tzitzura, Tani Nami Hoki, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa like that. Chonon Ben Tzitzimer, Chovil Yama, Tchelta de Bavel, Shunya, Guvia, Vitzitzura, all those three, Tchelta de Chovil Yama, are the most beautiful areas as far as Yuchsin within Chovil Yama. Omer Rapapa, however, Rapapa says, now it's not so much anymore. Nowadays, in that area of Chovil Yama, Kusim have gotten mixed into them, so they don't have such perfect Yuchsin. However, the Gemara says, Veloihi. Now, that's not actually so. What happened was, Itzahu de Bar Minayu, a Kusi went to this area to ask, to try to make a Shidduch. Veloyavu, but they didn't give him, they didn't allow him to intermarry with them, but then, therefore, he, in retaliation, started spreading false rumors about them that there were, in fact, Kusim mixed in with them. But it's not actually true. Rashi and Tosfos both bring a yesh omrim that the one who spread the rumors is actually the Papa himself, that he had gone to these places to ask for a wife and they told him no, and therefore he spread rumors about them. Rashi and Tosfos both say impossible. How would a Papa, a tzaddik, go and spread false rumors about these people? There is, in fact, it's interesting, there's a Gemara in Shabbos where the Papa says on himself, Yehei Chelki, Misha Choshin, well, actually, Rabbi Yossi says, Yehei Chelki, my portion, Gan Eden, should be be together with people who they suspect them, and it turns out it's not true. And Rav Papa says, "Would you defash them? Will I have a be? People suspected me, and it wasn't true." One possibility is he may be referring to this Gemara, where Rashi and Tosfos are bringing this explanation and rejecting it, that he was the one who spread the false rumors, and Rav Papa says, "That's false. I never did such a thing. My portion in Gan Eden should be with those people who are like that, who were accused unjustly." Yeah. Anyway. Okay, my Chovel Yama, what is this area called Chovel Yama? Amar Papa Zu Pros de Bursi. This is the area near the Pros, near the city of Bursi, or Bursif. Elsewhere, actually, the Gemara mentions that Bursif itself was a place of Amea Oret. However, the Gemara also mentions that the names of the cities of Bavel and Bursif were interchanged after the Churban. What used to be called Bavel came to be called Bursif, and the other way around. So this would be the area near the ancient city of Bavel, which in later times was called Bursif, and was saying that the city of Bavel itself was destroyed, and even nowadays it's in ruins. It's a place where archaeologists go around and dig up Nebuchadnezzar's palace and things like that, but it's not settled anymore. The Nevi'im cursed it that should never be resettled, but the area around it was an area of heavy Jewish population.
So that's a big, what area, Santino?
So now it's not, the city, what used to be the city of Bavel itself is empty and full of ruins. The Nevi'im, there's quite a few things in Yirmiyah and Yeshaya, whatever, how it's going to be in ruins forever. So archaeologists go and swarm around there every so often looking for tablets and things like that to tell us something about the ancient Babylonians. The Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar's people. Nowadays, all this is part of Iraq. Yeah. Okay.
I wonder if Iraq knows about this.
I don't know. Okay, next. A person once comes and says to the Chachamim, "I come from the city of Shut Mishut." So Rav Yitzchak Napcha got up and announced, "Shut Mishut is between the rivers." So which two rivers are we talking about? On the face of it, we mean the Chidekel on the Pros, and that would mean that it's a place of Yichus. However, Tosfos argues on that, though, that no, then the Gemara is going to ask, what's the nafkamina of Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha saying that? If it means the chidekel on the pros, it's obvious that what he means to say by that. Therefore, Tosfos learns over here, and also on a Gemara in Erevin, that no, we mean other rivers. So there's another river, there's another area called Bein Hanahores, and Shut Mishut is located there. And Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha is saying that that's still a good place of yours. Yeah. So wait. So the Gemara asks, "V'chibein anaharis emedis ma'yhavi?" Okay, so it's between the rivers, and so Amar Abaya, Amar Abchama ba'ukva, Amar Abyesu ba'chanina, bein anaharis harayik goyla liyuchsin. It means the area bein anaharis. Again, according to Rashi, it would be between the Chidekel and Pros. According to Tosfos, it would be some other rivers. Anyway, that area is again like the goyla, like Pumbedisa, as far as yuchsin. Okay, v'heich taima. Where is this Shut Mishut located? It's located upstream of the city Ihi Dekira. Ihi Dekira is a city on the Pros, on the banks of the Pros. It's mentioned in a couple of places in the Gemara as being a Goyish city. And nowadays, if you look on a map of Iraq, you'll find halfway up the Pros River, you'll find a city called Hit. That is the city of Ihi Dekira.
Hit?
Hit, it's called nowadays. H-I-T, yeah. Anyway. So that is the city of Ihi Dekira, or fairly close to it, whatever. So this Shut Mishut is located further up, on higher ground, further upstream than that. So the Gemara asks, "Well, I'm Rav Yechanan, and my Avauta de Gizma." Even Rav Yechanan only said, "As far as my Avauta de Gizma," and that's well further downstream than Ihi Dekira. So what are you telling me? Shut Mishut is located further upstream than Ihi Dekira, and it's still part of Bavel as far as Yuchsid. The Gemara answers, "I'm Abai with Sua Nafta." There's a strip of land that goes out from there. In other words, till now we were talking about the solid boundaries, but now you have sort of like a panhandle that sticks out. Past Ma'avauta de Gizma, bypassing Ihi Dekira, because Ihi Dekira is a Goyish city. You don't have Jews, or at least not very many Jews, living there. But the strip of land bypasses Ihi Dekira and continues further up, and eventually it includes Shut Mishut. And therefore, when this guy says, "I'm from Shut Mishut," then that amounts to saying, "I'm from a place of Yiddish." Yeah. Okay. Amr of Ikaba Oven, Amr of Hanano, Amr Rav. He was in Nehavan. Now let's talk about places outside of Bavel itself. The areas of Chilozen and Chilavan is a different girsa, and Nihavand, these are areas in Modai. Now, we said before that Modai is Chola. We said that the Modai, which is nowadays northwestern Iran, The capital of that area is Hamadan. You go talk to Persian Jews nowadays, you'll find some of them are from that area. Anyway, so we said before, it's chola. It's sick in the sense you have many kshedim over there, but you also have a substantial number of psulim. So now, Rav Ikar bar Oven is saying, Amar Rav Chanana, Amar Rav, those places within that region, Chilozen and Nihavan, Harek, Gola, Yuchsin, those are considered like the Gola, like Pumpadissa, as far as Yuchsin. Meaning, even though they're not part of the main settlement area of Babel, but you also have Jews who will be Yuchasim settled there, and therefore those areas have Yuchs. But Abaya says, when Rav Ikar bar Oven says this, they don't pay any attention to what Rav Ikar bar Oven is saying. Yavama, he did not follow Hassan. What must have happened is, Rav Ikar bar Oven has a Yavama. He has a brother who lived over there, and now there's a question of doing Yavama with her, so therefore he's claiming that the places over there have Yichus. Fine, he's not saying outright that Rav Ikar bar Oven is lying, but we did learn yesterday, and 2 days ago, in the story of Rav Yehuda and that guy from Nahauda, that if a Talmid Chacham says something like Achara Maisa, we say he might not deliberately be distorting it, but he might be, he has a certain bias over there, and therefore he might be misunderstanding things. So the same way, saying Rav Ikar bar Oven, you might not be understanding what was said correctly. Maybe it's not that there's such kshere yichus over there. But Rav Ikar bar Oven says, Otu didihu, what do you think this is something, Otu didihi, you think this is something I said on my own? Rav Hanano, I didn't say it on my own, I said it in the name of Rav Hanano. Go ask Rav Hanano what he says. Also, Shailu or Rav Hanano. So they went and asked Rav Hanano, Omaluhu, and he says, yeah, Ochi Amarav, Chilos and Nahavan, Harek, Gola, Yuchsin. Yeah, those areas are like the Gola, they are legitimate Yuchsin over there. However, the Gemara says, Pligad Rav Abba Bar Kahana. However, that opinion disagrees with Rav Abba Bar Kahana. The Omar of Abba Bar Kahana, my Dichtiv. Now let's go back to the Golas of the Aseres HaShvatim. So the Aseres HaShvatim, their kingdom was destroyed and they were taken into Golos by Sancheirev 130 odd years before the Churban Bayis Rishon. Yeah. Now the Pasuk says, by Yanchem, he led them into Golos, Bachalacho v'chover, Nahar Goizan v'orei Modai. Those are the places where he took the Aseres HaShvatim into Golos. So let's define those in terms that were more familiar in the times of the Gemara. Chalach Zuchilozin, the city called Chalach in Tanakh is called Chilozin in our times. Chavar Zuhadiev is a city called Hadiev in nowadays in northern Iraq. Nahau Gozan Zuginzak, Nahau Gozan refers to the city of Ginzak in Iran. Ore Madai Zuhamdan Mchabriseha, and Ore Madai refers to Hamadan and the cities around it, which is the capital of Madai. Others say it's Nahavan and the cities around it. My Chavre Seha, and what nearby cities are we talking about? Omashmo, Krach, Mushki, Chuski, Verumki. These three places, Mushki, Chuski, and Rumki are all in the area around Nahavan. Om Rabbi Yechanan, Bechola, Lifso, Bechola, Lifso. And Rabbi Yechanan says that all of them, we mean to say that they're all posel. The Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos to those places. The people of the Aseres HaShvatim ended up intermarrying with local Goyim, and therefore, therefore anybody you find over there, anybody you find from those areas who claims to be a Yid, might actually probably has Goyim mixed into his lineage, and therefore is not of such good kosher lineage. Not only that, Mephoshim explained, what may have happened is, you had people over there of the Aseres HaShvatim married Goyim, then they raised their children as Goyim, and then those children would have married Arayas without paying attention to it, because the Goyim don't pay attention to such things, and therefore there might be actual out-and-out Mamzerim among them. Anyway, the point is that of Abba Bar Kahana, by defining these places, including Chilozin and Nihavan, as places where the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos, on the contrary, he was saying, as Rabbi Yechanan is saying, that all of them are full of Psula Yichus, as opposed to Rav was saying, and Rabbi Hanana was quoting in his name, that Chilozin and Nihavan among them have Kosher Yichus, so now we're saying another opinion that on the contrary, they have Possible Yichus.
It wasn't 2.5 Shvatim?
The 2.5 Shvatim that were left were Yehuda and Binyamin. They went into Golos later at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon. That was 130 years later. The Ksheri Yuchsin that we're talking about in Babel are from that Golos. So ultimately, you have originally they settled in the area around the capital of Babel, and later on they spread out throughout the country. But that was after Churban Bayis Rishon, and then in the hundreds of years after that. Here we're going back to the Golos Aseres HaShvatim, Yeravam's kingdom, who were taken into Golos 130 odd years before that.
That's
originally when Yeravam split off and formed his own kingdom with the ten Shvatim. Yeah. So the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that many of those Jews who went into Golos in those places intermarried with the local Goyim. actually the Gemara brings an opinion over there that the Chachamim, that Hashem arranged that they should be infertile so that they don't end up having children who are Mamzerim, but the Gemara is not necessarily taking that view and saying among them there are ones who ended up producing Psula Yichus. By the way, many of the Aseres HaShvatim return about 90 years after their Golos. Yirmiyahu was sent by Hashem to go bring many of them back. Many of them did come back to Eretz Yisrael. Yoshiyahu ruled over them. They had one last Yovel, that was most of the Jewish people were back in Eretz Yisrael before the Churban, 36 years before the Churban. Afterwards, when there was the Golos, when Nebuchadnezzar took everybody into Golos, then they came along with them as well. So we do have members of all 12 Shvatim with us nowadays, but the ones who remain behind in these places where Yirmiyahu didn't come back with Yirmiyahu, they're the ones who were saying they assimilated among the Goyim and intermarried with them.
How did it come in because of Yirmiyahu?
Maybe because of that. Maybe it's possible. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, now, we mentioned, Shmuel had mentioned one of these places that's near Nahavan is Mush. So the Gemara says, Kastapadai, the Mushki and Mushkini. Now, we thought that Mushki and Mushkini are two names for the same place. But what do you mean? Before, when we were discussing the map of Bavel, we said that Shmuel had said that Mushkini has good yichus, like Pumpadissa. Have a Mushki Lachud or Mushkini Lachud. So you have to understand that Mushki and Mushkini are two different places. Mushki has Psulim, Mushkini has Chayim. Okay. Speaking of these places of Chilozin and other areas of that where the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos, so the Gemara digresses to talk a little bit about those places in terms of, now you had, these areas are basically on the border between, at that time you had the two great powers in that part of the world are, during the time of the Gemara, were the Persian Empire and the Roman Empire. And these areas, some of these areas that we're talking about, were kind of on the border between them. So now, like, you have Daniel, In his visions, Daniel sees a vision of a bear-like creature, which the Gemara is going to say soon, refers to the Persians, and he sees that the Gemara is going to quote, Utlas, so he sees animals representing the four great powers that are going to rule over the Jewish people from his time till Mashiach comes. First he sees a creature representing Babel, then another one representing Persia, another one representing Alexander the Great's empire and the successor kingdoms that came from that, the Syrian Greeks, the Egyptian Greeks, and whatever, all included in the third one, Yumalpas Yavon, and then a fourth one representing the Romans. Agav, you have a number of Rishonim, like Sadia Goyen and Eben Ezra, who learn that actually the third one is the Greeks and the Romans together, because he said they basically have the same culture, and the fourth one, he says, is the Arabs. The point is that, so Daniel sees one of the animals that he sees over there is a bear-like creature, and now the Gemara describes, he sees in his vision, with Tlas Ilin Befuma Ben Shina. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. So in other words, it's like as if it had just eaten up an animal, and it still has three ribs of the animal in its mouth. So Omer of Yechon, Zuchalozin Hadyev Unitziven, that refers to some of the places we just, Chilozin and Hadyev, that we just mentioned, among the places where the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos, as well as the city of Nitziven, in what's nowadays southern Turkey. Shepa'omim Bailatan, Apa'omim Pailatan, sometimes the Persian Empire, which is represented by this bear, swallows them and sometimes spits them out, meaning they're constantly changing hands. Sometimes these places are ruled over by the Persians, sometimes they end up becoming independent, or they end up coming under the control of the Romans, and they keep on going back and forth. In history books, you'll find, in fact, quite a lot of the wars between the Persians and the Romans during the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara were fought over precisely those areas. So therefore, so Daniel is seeing in his vision as representing, like, the bear hadn't swallowed them, which would imply they became a solid part of the empire. It hadn't spit them out, which would imply that it doesn't rule over them. They're in its mouth, between its teeth, implying it's trying to swallow them, and sometimes it's able to, and sometimes not.
You know, it's caught in between.
Yeah. The Yidden in those places must have been caught in between. Yeah, sure. Next, in that same vision of Daniel, he describes, he says, I saw another creature resembling a bear. After he saw the first one representing Babel, which he describes over there, it looked like a lion with eagle wings. Then he sees a second one looking like a bear representing Persia. Tony Rav Yosef, Eilu Parsiim, so specifically that means the Persians, and they're compared to a bear. Sha'ochan v'shoisin kadoiv, they eat and drink gluttonously like a bear. Umserbolin kadoiv, they're covered with flesh like a bear. very, very muscular like a bear. Or Megadlin Seir Kedoiv, they grow their hair long like a bear. Ve'imahem Menucha Kedoiv, and they have no rest. They're constantly on the move like a bear. So therefore, they're comparing. In fact, Marsha points out, the Gemara in Yuma tells us the Malach of Persia up in Shemayim is called Dubiel from the same church. And in fact, Rab Ami, Kiyav Chosi, Pausa de Rochiv, when Rab Ami would see a Persian riding on a horse, Omar, he would say, Hainu Duba Naida, look at that, there goes a wandering bear, because again, the Persians are very much like bears. There are places in Hasidus where it talks about there's a certain, there's a Mal Yuse, and as much as we're saying, we're talking in a negative way against the Persians, earlier in the Masechta, we learned Persians are particularly powerful. We said 10 measures of Gvura came down to the world, and the Persians got 9 of them. So there's the idea, in other words, that they have a certain gvura which can be used for purposes of kedusha. There's an interesting explanation from Oblev Yitzchok talking about the mitzvah of Rebbe whose name was Doiv Bear, that the Doiv over there represents the advantages that you have of the bear over here that represents gvura, the gvura that can be used in a positive way. The Rebbe also talked about one time in connection with the Rebbe, the Shab Shalom Doiv Bear. Among other things, it represents that they're strong, but yet they're constantly on the move. They're constantly wandering around and looking for more, the way that a Yid should be with Torah. He's never satisfied with the Torah. He learns, he's constantly looking for more. And that's Shalom Doiv Bear. We bring Shalom into the world through that, and so forth. Okay, so the Gemara continues in this connection. Omale Rebbe Lelevi. Rebbe one time asked this Talmud Levi, have any Pausim? Show me the Persian. So that can mean describe to me verbally what they're like. I saw an interesting explanation, actually. We find in some other places in the Gemara where Levi would actually demonstrate things in front of Rebbe. For example, we have the story where he demonstrated Kida, the special kind of bowing down where he picks himself up with his thumbs there, and then he became lame from it. So therefore, Rebbe may be saying to Levi, don't just tell me, but show me like a pantomime what the Persians are like. So Levi describes him, they're like the soldiers of David's army. Very strong, very disciplined. Then Levi says, Harini Chavrin. Now show me what the Chavrin are like. We've talked about the Chavrin before. They were a group within the Persians themselves. Rashi describes they're more destructive and more hostile than the Persians. Based on other Gemaras, it comes out basically they were the Persian Galochim in particular. They were like a subgroup within the Persians, a subnation, but from them came most of the Persian Galochim who were generally hostile to the Jews. So Rebbe says, to describe them to me. Eventually they ended up taking over Persia. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos that when Rabbi Yochanan heard that they had taken over, he was very startled and very fell off his chair. What's going to happen to the Jews there now? Until they told him they're willing to accept bribes, and then he calmed down and he realized in that case the Yidden and Babel will be able to manage. We learned in Gittin also, for example, we had a story where Rabbi Baba Chana is sitting with a couple of his chaverim, and one of these chavrin came in and took away their lamp because it was a goyish chaga, and they weren't allowed to have lights in their houses. And then Rabbi Baba Chana says, things have gotten so bad, Hashem, we would do better if only we were under the rule of the Romans instead. They're not as bad as these chavrin. So now Rebbe is asking Levi in his time, so describe to me what the chavrim are like. He answers, they're like destructive malachim. Then he says, Hareini Yishma'elim, show me what the Yishma'elim are like. They're the Arabs. And he answers, they're like the shadim that hang out around bathrooms. In particular, Rashi says, they wear black clothes. So in that sense, they're similar to shadim. Then, Hareini Tamid Chachamim Shema Bavel, show me what the Tamid Chachamim in Bavel are like. And Levi answers, Dermal Malachi Asharis, they resemble Malachi Asharis because they wear white clothes for the same reason that we wear white clothes on Yom Kippur. We're one of the ideas. We wear a kittel to be like a Malachim. So in the same vein, the Tamil Chachamim in Bavel dress like Malachim. Rashi refers to a Gemara in the Dorim that actually says, when it talks about the Malachi Asharis said a certain thing to one of the Chachamim, who are the Malachi Asharis, means the Chachamim. Okay. So now the Gemara further digresses. Before Rebbe passed away, he said almost like a nevuah, certain things about what's going on in Bavel. First of all, Humanya Ikaba Bavel. There's a city in Bavel called Humanya. You should know, Kula Amonoi. All the people there are descended from Amonim. And as the Gemara is going to point out on Amud Beis, they were generally very unfriendly and very hostile to the Jews who lived in the nearby area. So even though Rebbe is living in Eretz Yisrael, and how would he know such a detail? But he knows it with Ruach HaKodesh. Masgaria Ikababa, there's a place in Babel called Masgaria, called the Mamzerim. You should know all the people living there are Mamzerim. Birka Ikababa, there's a place in Babel called Birka. Shnei Achim Yesh, Machlifin Shasem Zelazet. You should know that in that town there are two brothers who are exchanging their wives with each other, which means you should know anybody who's descended from those brothers is going to be Mamzerim. Another one, Birta de Satya Ikababa. There's a place in Babel called Birta de Satya, Hayoim Soru Me'achra Mokim, and today they left following Hashem. Satya actually means to go away, like a soita, to go on the wrong path. So today they abandon Hashem. What happened? The Gemara tells the background. One time the local pond, the local lake flooded, and there were a lot of fish. There were a lot of fish that were left over on the banks of the river. So people were coming, catching those fish on Shabbos, which is one of the 39 melachos. V'shamtinu Rav Achi b'Rav Yoshia. So Rav Achi b'Rav Yoshia put those people in cherem for breaking Shabbos. V'ishtamud, and the result is all those people shmadza. They all decided, forget about Yiddishkeit. We're just going to become goyim. So Rebbe is informing the people in Eretz Yisrael of all these details. Now, the Terumah Sadeshin learns a very interesting halacha from here. The question is, Rabbi Achi Bar Yoshia, didn't he realize putting them in cheder might drive them completely off the derech? Why did he do that? So the Terumah Sadeshin says, evidently, you learn from here, when a person deserves to be put in cheder, don't worry about what's going to happen afterwards. You've got to do what you've got to do. And the Ramah brings this halacha. On the other hand, he says that's why Rebbe would be saying this. He's not just telling them facts of what's going on in Babel. He wants to teach them what Rabbi Bar Yoshia did is correct. However, the Taz argues with that and says it's not really a solid proof. Maybe Rebbe wants to substantiate everything else he's saying. People are going to wonder, is it really true that everybody in Umania is in Ammonia? Is it really true that everybody in Masgaria or Mamzerim, etc.? But then he tells one easily checkable fact, and from that you can see that everything else he says is correct. So the Taz says maybe no. If you have a person who might go in Shmadzich, if you put him in Cherem, maybe better don't do that. In turn, the Shach disagrees with the Taz on that, so it's complicated. Different Achronim also talk about different angles on that. Sometimes you might have somebody who deserves to be put in Cherem, but we can't because he's too powerful and he might cause tremendous trouble for the Jews. Historically, often that happened. People were put in Cherem. They would end up Shmadzich sich and cause tremendous trouble for the Jews. So it's something that Bati Dinim have to be careful with. Anyway. Continues Rebbe on the positive way, though. On the other hand, Akra de Agma Ikba Bavel, there's a place in Bavel called Akra de Agma, Adaba Ava Yeshba, there's someone in it named Adaba Ava. You should know, Hayoim Yoshe Becheke Shal Avram, Avinu Shal Avram. Today he's sitting in Avraham's lap. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says one explanation is it means he passed away. Now, if that's the case, Rashi says, we know of an Amora named Rav Adabar Ava. In that case, this wouldn't be him, because if he passed away in Rebbe's times, then that's still in the times of the Tanoim. However, then Rashi brings another explanation, which he prefers, that Yosha Becheke Shal Abraham Avinu means today is his Bris Milah. Now, we do find Rav Adabar Ava in later generations. We find him either in the time of Rav Nachman Yitzchak, who was among the fifth generation of Amoraim. So in that case, it means he had Arichus Yomim, means he lived well over 100 years. Tosfos brings that also. Tosfos says that maybe not. There might actually be more than one Rav Adabar Ava in Shas. There might be the one over here who was born in Rebbe's time, and a different one who was a chaver of Rav Nachman Yitzchak 100 or so years later. In fact, the Sefer Toldos Tanoim Bamiroyim says, based on various Gemaras, it seems that there were at least three Rav Adabar Avas in Shas. It was a popular name, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so Rebbe wants the people to know that Adabar Ava was either, according to the first explanation, passed away today, or according to the second explanation, that he was born, or not born, but had his Bris Milah today. And he's going to grow up to be a great Talmid Chacham. Rebbe continues, Hayom Nolad Rav Yehuda b'Bavel. Furthermore, today Rav Yehuda was born in Bavel, who later became the famous Amora, Rav Yehuda. The Amar Maariv, in fact, we learn in a Braisa. Kshemnes Rabbi Akiva Nolad Rebbe. When Rabbi Akiva passed away, Rebbe was born. Kshemnes Rebbe Nolad Rabbi Yehuda. When Rebbe passed away, Rabbi Yehuda was born. Kshemnes Rabbi Yehuda Nolad Rava. Kshemnes Rava Nolad Ravashi. Each one was born when the previous one passed away. With that said, Hagos Ma'arav Ranshburg points out that the Rambam has a different girsa that before Ravashi passed, that before Rava passed away, Ravashi was born. We do find a few places in the Gemara, Ravashi talking in Torah with Rava, implying that he must have been already at least in his teens when Rava passed away. So it doesn't necessarily mean he was born on the same day that Rava passed away, but rather that Hashem already prepared him to be able to take over. All of this teaches you, before one tzaddik passes away, Hashem already creates the next tzaddik of his caliber. As the pasuk says, the sun rises and the sun sets. So in other words, Hashem makes the new sun rise before the previous one sets. So, for example, actually, before Eli's light, before his sun went out, already Shmuel, the Navi Shmuel's light was already shining. The pasuk says the lamp of Hashem, on the face of it, it means the menorah had not yet gone out, and Shmuel was lying in this place in the area around Mishkan Shiloh, and then Hashem gave him his first nevuah. But we're also understanding it means the light of Hashem, meaning Eli, had not yet gone out, before that light was extinguished, before Eli passed away, Hashem already prepared Shmuel to be the next Navi and the next leader of the generation.
From the
each one took over for the other one. Yes, Hashem always makes sure that there's a leader for the Jewish people. Hamakna, I think it is, points out an interesting point. He said, why the comparison to the sun? He says, because you think of it, when the sun sets, it doesn't mean the sun has disappeared. It just means it's out of our field of vision. The same way that Tzaddik passed away, he's not gone. He's in the Olam HaSoyonim. In fact, the Alter Rebbe says in Tani, he's Yatim Ibchayoy, he's even more in our world, even more than before. We just don't see him. But the Eivishter already prepares that there's a new sun, a new Tzaddik to take over for him. That's true. This is actually in Tanya these days, in a few days from now, the Alter Rebbe is talking about Reb Mendel Horodoker. But yeah, the same thing applies to every Tzaddik. The same thing applies to the Nasi of every generation. What were you going to say?
Yeah, so who's replacing the Nasi of our generation, the Rebbe?
Very good question.
We don't have a Nasi right now.
Is someone, obviously, but I don't know either. Listen, I mean, when Rebbe passed away, only because he tells us Rebbe Yehuda was already born, would we know? Otherwise, Rebbe Yehuda is a baby, like thousands of other babies in Babel. How would we know? He's going to end up being the leader of Unsha. Eventually, they realized it. So, eventually, I guess in retrospect, we'll look back and we'll see. I don't know.
So how long do we have to know before the Nasi appears
really
to be the Nasi?
I don't really know, and come on, we don't really have the time to discuss this now, but we gotta get going. But yeah, that's the fact. You know, there is the famous story involving the Hasofer family from Tasmania. They tell the well-known story that they were not at all from, they were living in Tasmania, which is an island off the coast of Australia. And they're thinking to themselves, they start getting interested in Tanakh, and the husband over there, Michal, starts realizing, you know what, every time, you always find Hashem always appointed, there's always a leader over the Jewish people. There must be a leader of the Jewish people now. I don't know who it is, but he starts davening to Hashem in his own way, please let me find out who that leader is. And then, all of a sudden, out of the blue, the Rebbe tells Gutnik to go to Tasmania and find Jews over there, and he has no idea what he's looking for, and he's walking down the street and meets this Michal and his wife, and everything developed from there. They became Baalei Teshuva, they built a beautiful Jewish family, and all because of that realization that the Eivishter always provides a leader for the Jewish people. Yeah. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara mentions, now we mentioned before, Rebbe had said that there's this place, Humanya, which is full of descendants of Ammonim. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, you have the pasuk in Eicha, Siva Hashem liYakov, Svivav Tzarav, Hashem commanded regarding Yaakov that his enemies will be all around him. So Rav Yehuda Omar, Kegon Humanya l'Pumnara, here is an example. Even in Babel, you have the city of Humanya, which we said is full of hostile goyim from Ammon, and it's near the city of Pumnara, which was a Jewish city in Babel, so you have the same thing. Hashem arranged that these Ammonim, of all places, are going to be living near Pumnara and causing trouble to the Jews there.
That sounds like a curse, though.
Yeah, well, that's Ksiv Hashem L'Yakov. In other words, it's part of Megillas Eicha. Hashem, the Navi is saying, and look at this, Hashem made it. It's not just we have Tzaras in Eretz Yisrael. Even we go to Chutz La'aretz and we would think, what's the likelihood that we're going to find the same enemies over there? But the Eidosh Der arranges that they're still there. Now, one thing it is, I mean, you know, unfortunately, when you know, sometimes it happens, it takes those kinds of Tzaras to make Jews wake up and do tshuva and not assimilate among the goyim. So maybe that was necessary over here. Yeah. Okay. Further on this topic of where the Jews settled in Babel, and particularly focusing on Mishan that we said before, which was an area full of psalim. Now, so the Gemara starts by introducing a pasuk in Yechezkel. The Navi describes, you have in the early part of Sefer Yechezkel, Hashem takes him in the Nevuah to Yerushalayim. Yechezkel himself lived in Babel, but Hashem takes him on a Nevuah tour around Yerushalayim and shows him what's going on over there, how people are worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing different Avedas. So at one point, Hashem takes him to the Beis Hamikdash. He sees about 25 men standing over there. And then Hashem tells him these people are thinking, these Nevuahs that the Nevi'im are saying, there's going to be a Churban, there's going to be a Golas. It's a long time from now. We have nothing to worry about. We can live it up now. So now, see, Yechezkel sees all that, and Hashem tells him to say Nevuah against them, and then comes the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting over here. Vayihi kehi Navi, as I was saying this Nevuah, uflat Yahu ben Benayahu mes. And Platyahu ben Benoya, who were at the beginning of that parent, Yechezkel describes among 25 people, I saw him standing over there, and I mean, he was a prominent person, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, all of a sudden, Yechezkel says, in my Nevuah, I saw him die. But Epilaponis, I fell on my face, for Ezak Perlbodo, I screamed out in a loud voice, but Omer, and he said, Aho Hashem Alekim, whoa, Hashem, please accept my tefillah, why all of a sudden, why did this guy die? So now, Rav and Shmuel argue, what was Yechezkel upset about? Chad amal toiva, chad amal ra. One is that Yechezkel meant it for the good. This Platya ben Benoya, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, did a great thing for the Jewish people. So now Yechezkel is upset. Why does he have to die young? The other, chad amal ra, between Rav and Shmuel, the other one says it was for bad. Platya was a Rasha, and the question is, why does he deserve such an easy death? So let's go through it. Manda Amalatova, the one who says it was for good, was as follows. Kihodi standard of Meshan, the governor of Meshan, Chasni Nebuchadnezzar Hava, was the son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar. Shplachle, so after the Churban Bais Rishon, after all the Jews had been taken into Golus to Babel, Shplachle, this governor of Meshan, Nebuchadnezzar's son-in-law, sent a message. He says, Mekula Hai Shiria, the Isis Loch, out of all these captives that you brought for your area in Babel, Lo Shadrith Lon Dekori Lekamon, you didn't send me any to my area of Meshan. I'd like some of these Jewish brains in my area as well. So Nebuchadnezzar was going to take some of the Jews and send them off to Meshan, Mi Yisrael, from the Jews in Babel, and send them to Meshan.
Make them happy.
Yeah. Omele Platyahu ben Benayahu, but now Platyahu, who was a prominent person, says to Nebuchadnezzar, better to not do that. Anan de Chashvinan, we who are more important, Neko Mikamach, we should stand before you. We'll be in your area around Babel because we're more important and it's more dignified for you, the emperor, that you should have us as your personal avodim. Hocha over here. But Abdin Nezlo Lahasam will send our avodim there. Your son-in-law can have some of our avodim. So now the point is that was a good thing he did for the Jewish people because it meant that now, after all, it's more dignified to be slaves of a king rather than avodim la avodim. We find by the Haggadah also, for example, when it says avodim are you know fare b'mitzrayim, there's an explanation that it means that we're saying even though we were avodim mitzrayim, primarily we were avodim of paroi, which is more dignified rather than being avodim of the common people who themselves are avodim of paroi. So the same way, better that the Jewish people should be under the direct rule of Nebuchadnezzar rather than under his son-in-law who himself is subservient to Nebuchadnezzar. So in that case, Platyahu did a very good thing for the Jewish people. So then, in that case, now the Navi is saying, Misha also tova b'Yisrael, yomus b'chatzi yomam. Is it right that this person who did such a good thing for the Jewish people in Babel should die young, should die in the middle of his years? Manda amal ra, on the other hand, the opinion that Yechezkel was upset because the guy had done bad is like this. The posuk says, that tove oisi yoshabes Hashem akadmoni aponya kadima, earlier in Sefer Yechezkel, or actually at the beginning of that Perek in Yechezkel, he describes that Hashem's Nevuah brought me to the eastern gate of the Beis Mikdash. V'hini v'pesach shar esrim v'chamisha ish. At the entrance of the gate, there were 25 men. V'era v'seichem es Ya'azaniah ben Azur v'es Platyo ben Benayo Sarayam. Among them I saw Ya'azaniah ben Azur and Platyo ben Benayo, who were prominent leaders of the people. So they're prominent people. Now, earlier in Sefer Yechezkel, he also describes a similar scene. By Yahweh Osi Ochatzabe Hashem Apnimis, he brought me to the inner courtyard of Hashem's house, meaning to the Azara. V'hinei Pesach Heichal Hashem v'hinei Olam v'hinei Mizbeach ke'esrim v'chamishish. In front of the entrance of the Heichal, between the Olam and the Mizbeach, were about 25 men. The Gemara is assuming that the same 25 men in Perek Ches and in Perek Yeralim. In Perek Yud Aleph is where he sees among them Platyo ben Benayo, and then he sees him dropping dead. And now earlier in Perek Ches, he'd seen 25 people. The Gemara is assuming that these are the same 25 people. Now the pasuk says they're standing in front of the Heichal. Achiveyem al Heichal Hashem ufneim kedma. Their backs were towards the Heichal, and their faces were facing towards the east. And the pasuk goes on to mention that they were bowing down to the sun. So now, the Gemara asks, Mimash Meshenemu, Fneim Kedma, Eni Yadeh Shacharem, Fatamayrav, if they're facing east, of course their backs are towards the west, towards the Heichal, why does the Pasuk need to mention it? Melamed, Shoy, Mafriyan Atzmu, Matrizan Atzmu, Klapi Maila. From the Matam Adan Acharem Al Heichal Hashem, so what is that adding? Melamed, Shoy, Mafriyan Atzmu, means they were actually uncovering themselves, Matrizan Atzmu, Klapi Maila, and they were going to the bathroom in front of, in front of Hashem. So they're showing such chutzpah to Hashem. They're defecating in front of Hashem, almost as if like they're worshiping Pa'ur right there in the Beis Mikdash, and at the same time they're bowing to the sun.
The first Beis Mikdash,
when there was still a big problem with Avodah Zarah. So, and now, based on Perek Yud Aleph, we understand that Platyahu was one of these people. By the way, in the second Beis Mikdash, because of this, this thing that Yechezkel saw caused a minhag that they had in the second Beis Mikdash. The Mishnah mentions in Sukkah when they were going out of the Beis Mikdash towards the east to go down in Yerushalayim to the Shiloyach spring to fill up water for the Nisach HaMayim. Every year at the end of Simchas Beis Sheva, they would walk all the way to the eastern gate. Then they would turn around and they would say, our ancestors were in this place and did this disgusting display that Yechezkel is describing, but we're not like that. Onu l'ka'i. Our eyes are turned towards Hashem. So
we say in
Rosh Hashanah, Onu l'ka v'inenu l'ka. Yeah, there was a later Paitan, Rabbi Amitai, who composed the piyut, Ezker Elikin v'Emoya, who used that expression in his piyut. So now this opinion says that Yechezkel saying Misha also haroa azos b'Yisrael yomus hamutasei. Is it right that a person who did such a disgusting, terrible thing among the Jews should die peacefully in his bed? So those are the two possibilities of why Yechezkel is crying out to Hashem.
But it says that it was a peaceful death.
It says that mace, meaning that he died, which means, in other words, like he had a heart attack and died or something. But in other words, like unlike dying from the hunger that was in Yerushalayim during the siege, or being killed by the Bavliim or whatever. So he had a peaceful death.
Oh yeah, one person could give a chalukas about him.
It could have been both. He could have been a Rasha and he also helped in this. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Now, which one said which? The Gemara says, "Distein de Shmuel de Amal Ra." We can conclude that Shmuel is the one who says that Platyahu did bad, and he apparently disagrees. So now the Gemara is assuming that he disagrees with the story that he said, that we said before, that he convinced Nebuchadnezzar to let the Jews stay in Bavel proper and send only their Avodim to Meshan. We can conclude that Shmuel disagrees with that. We said before that Mushkini in the north of Bavel is considered like Pumpadisa, like a Gola, as far as Yuchsin. On the other hand, Shmuel continues, Mishon, Loich Koshu, Loloi Mishum Abdus, Loloi Mishum Mamzerus. When it comes to Mishon, that we said before, the problem is there are Psula Yichos over there. It's not that they're Avodim, it's not that they're Mamzerim. Ela Koinim Shem Hoyubala, Yikpidu Ala Grushas. What happened is, the Koinim who lived in Mishon were not careful to avoid marrying Grushas. So therefore, many of their children are Chalolim. But in other words, Shmuel is saying it's not a problem that there are Avodim living in Meshan. Well, the story before is that all of the Avodim of the Jews were sent to Meshan. So therefore, Shmuel evidently disagrees with that. And therefore, so he would hold that story didn't happen. So therefore, according to him, Platyahu was only a Rosh. According to him, he didn't do any good for the Jewish people. However, the Gemara says not necessarily. Maybe you could say Shmuel said that it was for good. Or Shmuel, l'taimei, when Shmuel says that we're not concerned about Avodim, because he's going according to his shita. Shmuel says, when a person declares his Eved to be Hefker, then that Eved automatically goes free, and it's sort of get Shichru, and he doesn't need a get Shichru to make him allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael. Shenema, because the Pasuk says, V'chol Eved Ish Miknas Kosef, any slave of a person who was bought with money, then you have to maul him before you can eat the Korban Pesach. So why do you have to say Eved Ish? What do you mean, Eved Ish, V'lo Eved Isha? Would that din only apply to a slave of a Jewish man, not of a Jewish woman? Ella, Eved Sheyesh Lo Reshus L'Rabbi Olav, the Pasuk is teaching you that an Eved whose master has control over him, Kori Eved, such a person is called an Eved. Eved Chein L'Rabbi Reshus Olav, and Kori Eved, so therefore he's not called an Eved anymore, he'd be called an Eved Meshuchrad. So therefore, so Shmuel could agree that Plakyahu told Muhammad that he should send the Avodim of the Jews to Meshan. Well, then they're not under the control of their Jewish masters anymore. So they automatically go free. Therefore, Shmuel is saying, in later generations, there's no problem that there are Avodim in Meshan, they're descendants of Avodim, but that doesn't make them psulim to marry into the Kahal. Rather, the problem is that the Kohenim over there are not careful about Grushas. So we could still say that Shmuel does say that Platyahu was the one who gave that advice to Nebuchadnezzar, and therefore the Ichazko was upset why he died young.
So again, the positive thing about him sending off the Yidden,
sending off the Avodim to Meshan, is that way the Jews themselves remain in Babel under the direct control of Nebuchadnezzar, which is a more bekavadika thing for them. They should be directly subjects of the emperor himself, rather than subjects of a governor who's subject to the emperor. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zu Divrei Rav Meir. Everything we've been talking about so far about Bavel being cleaner as far as Yuchsin and other places, you need to check into the Yuchsin. All this is only according to Rav Meir. The Chachamim disagree with this whole concept. They say all lands have a cheskes kashrus. So in other words, when you're marrying a woman from any country, you don't specifically have to check into their Yuchs. And this is the halacha, as brought in Shulchan Aruch. So nowadays, you see, when people do shiduchim, you want to check out, the girl's qualities and all, you don't start checking into generations back to see whether there were mamzerim or whatever among them. You generally, every family has a cheskes kashrus.
Even though they come from a certain place.
Even though they come from a certain place. So all of this that we were discussing, there's places where they have yichus, places where they don't. Now we're saying the chachamim don't hold of that concept. Also true, yeah. So, and the Gemara tells, in fact, Amema shorah le Rav Huna bar Nosson, l'mintz of Itza, Mechuz Yosa. Amema gave a heter to Rav Huna bar Nosson to marry a wife from Mechuzah. Omole Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says to Amema, my daitach, what are you thinking? Do Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Zudir Rav Meir of Achamem Kol Arotz B'cheskes Kashrus Hein Emdus? So you're thinking, therefore, that there's no problem with Mechuzah. Now, Mechuzah itself is in Bavel, it's Rava's city. But we're going to learn tomorrow that it had a lot of gerim in it. And apparently, besides for gerim, it may have had a lot of other psula yichus mixed in as well. And yet, Amema is allowing Rav Huna bar Nosson to marry from there. So you're saying why? Because everybody has a cheskes kashrus. But in the yeshiva of Kahana, they don't learn like that. Obeid of Papa le Masni Hachi, also not in the yeshiva of Papa. Obeid of Zvid le Masni Hachi, and in Zvid yeshiva, they also don't learn that way. So yes, Shmuel is saying that there's a machlokas from Neir and the Chachamim about that, but all these other Amiroyim disagree with that. Nevertheless, Amema did not accept that statement from Rav Ashi, and he didn't change his mind. Because he had heard from Rav Zvid of Nahavda, who is different than the regular Rav Zvid we just mentioned, and Rav Zvid ben Nahavda does agree with what Shmuel says, that yes, kol ha'arotz is b'cheskes kashrus ein emdus, as long as you don't have a particular reason to suspect a psul in a family, then you are allowed to intermarry with that family without any problems. And that is the halacha as brought in Shulchan Aruch.
And we also learned that something we learned a few days ago about those families that were always fighting with other people, those are troubling.
So if you have to fight, families that always are fighting with other ones, then yeah, you have to be careful about them. But other than that, we're saying that that families in general have a cheskes kashrus.
So all the bread we learned now about Bavel, all those places.
So all those places, then we're saying it's not negei halacha. Nowadays, certainly not, because right. Obviously Jews don't live in Bavel in those places, but even before that, yeah. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with more discussion.
How do you establish a cheskes kashrus? What do you have to do practically?
So basically,
you have
what
to
it means
how
is
many generations?
By, so it means like this: by default, any Jewish family has a cheskes kashrus. Meaning, when you're read a shidduch with somebody from that family, you don't have to start doing genealogical investigations with their father or grandfather or great grandmother or whatever, or mamzeres or nesina or whatever. You can assume they're part of the Jewish community. They're kshev. If you have reason to suspect, then you have to start checking into things. For example, sometimes nowadays you have situations where a couple was married, where a couple was married and then divorced, and there wasn't a get. So then you have to get into the question of whether they were married by halacha. If they were and there was no get, then of course you have big problems. But other than that, in other words, in general, when you're read a shidduch, now you do have, it's true nowadays, for example, you have, let's say, these Jews who are coming from Russia and other places like that, where this question, how many of them are actually Jews and how many of them are going pretending to be Jews just in order to be able to get into Israel under the law of return, that's another question. So then you might have to check into them. But when you have a regular family that's behaving themselves as Yidden, then they have a cheskes kashrus, you can assume they're kosher, you can assume there's no mamzerim or mesinim or what have you mixed into them. And you don't have to check it out unless there's a reyesa, unless there's a particular reason to think that there might be something wrong with their yidus.
In Russia, they destroyed all the documents, all the ksuvos and all the gittin. They destroyed them. They were not allowed to have them. How can you sort this out? It's a mess.
That's a good point, and the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael have a hard time with that. In fact, when people come from Russia and Ukraine and other such places, figuring out how we know which ones are legitimate Jews and which ones are not, and what went on with the gittin over there, yeah, it does become sometimes very difficult to figure out what's what over there, yeah. That's it. It keeps Rabbanim very busy, yeah. But we're talking about.
Yeah, and even in Sephardic areas, they don't have all their documents.
It's true. So they're to a certain extent, we have to rely on chazaka. So again, if you have a family that's frum and they go to shul and they keep kashrus and Shabbos and they keep all the mitzvahs, then you can assume they have a cheskes kashrus, they have a chazaka that they're kosher to Jews and there's no problem among them of goyim or mamzerim or whatever mixed into them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right there.